Welcome to one of the five parts of our very special series on technology and AP. In this session, we're going to focus on payments in accounts payable and specifically non-check payments. That's why I have these two experts with me today. So let's get started. I want to start with what I think is a really big deal in the payment space. So Rob Unger from NACHA, can you tell us a little bit about the limit on same-day ACH being raised to $1 million? Do I have that right?
That's right, Mary. $1 million buckaroos. So, Mary, for those of your audience who are familiar with ACH, ACH is a bank-to-bank account transfer, and it can be used to push a credit payment. For example, direct deposit of payroll. That's your employer pushing a credit to your bank account. But it also facilitates what we call debit transactions, mm-hmm. where money can be pulled from your account. So you may have a utility bill or a car payment, mm-hmm. where that biller, actually, you give them permission to pull the money from your account. So it works both ways. And what we call a classic ACH, if you remember Classic Coke, in classic ACH, a payment that is initiated today will settle tomorrow. So if your company is issuing a direct deposit of payroll today, you're going to get your money tomorrow. Same day ACH collapses that time frame. And so that a payment initiated today within certain windows, regardless of whether it's a credit or a debit, but a U.S. payment issued today, can be settled today, usually within several hours. So when same-day ACH came out in, 2017, there was a lot of concern from the banks that we sort of limit the exposure to make sure we're not introducing any more fraud or risk in transactions. So the initial cap on same-day ACH was $25,000. Now, for you and me and Lynn, that's more money than we're ever going to send, right? But for companies sending big payments, that was a bit of a limitation. Over time, it was raised to $100,000. And then in March of 2022, next year, the cap will be $1 million for a credit or debit payment made in the U.S. using same day. So that means, again, a payment initiated today, up to $1 million, can be settled today, so usually within several hours.
So either a credit or a debit, and mm-hmm. is that only a domestic payment?
Yes, it's only a domestic payment. Just to add a little bit of flavor, so you can send international ACH. There's a up to about, I think, 25 different currencies, you know, European Union, Brazil, China. There is a mutual exchange, but it has to go through, you know, different gateways and operators. So same-day ACH is not applicable to what we call the international ACH transaction. Usually that takes like several days, but it is certainly applicable to any U.S. domestic business or consumer payment, again, up to $1 million as of March 2022.
So same-day ACH, in a way, is similar to a wire transfer. They seem to accomplish the same thing or almost the same thing domestically, but there are some differences. Could you explain them?
Yeah, there sure are. And this is a really confusing thing for a lot of people. So when you think about payment types usually are comprised of rules and rails, right? So there's usually a governing body, and then there's rails in which money is moved. So I'm sure Lynn might get into it, but when you think about cards, you know, Visa, MasterCard, right? The rules are governed by the associations, Visa, MasterCard, respectively, and they have rails in which to move those authorizations and the funds. ACH has both rails and rules. The rules are governed by us, NACHA. We're the rule body, so we define all the rules for all ACH transactions, which means we define not only the data formats, but the roles, responsibilities, warranties, breach of contract, all that kind of stuff is defined by NACHA. So the ACH has rules, which are defined by NACHA, and rails, right? There's actually an ACH rail. There's what we call two operators. One is the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And one is the Federal Reserve. That's the public sector operator, if you will, and the private sector operator is the New York Clearinghouse. So all ACH transactions move through one of those two rail providers, if you will. Now, when you think about wire, the New York Clearinghouse And the Federal Reserve also operate the wire systems. So the wire systems are named, Fed Wire for the Federal Reserve System and CHIPS for the New York Clearinghouse System. So those are the rails. They actually have the rails. And each of them respectively governs, although there's some interoperability, each of them governs the rules around the wire. So NACHA does not participate in anything. So I just wanted to provide that sort of context. Rules and rails comprise payment systems. With respect to the differences between same-day ACH and wire, Mary, you're right. Effectively, they're kind of the same. Wire simply used, there's no limits on wire, so there's no million-dollar cap. Wire moves effectively, in seconds or minutes. Same-day ACH probably takes hours. But another big difference between wire and same-day ACH, two big differences. One is cost. A wire system is going to cost a lot more than a same-day ACH. A wire payment is irrevocable, which means if you make a mistake in a wire payment, send it to the wrong account, send the wrong amount, it's irrevocable. It's bye-bye funds. In ACH does provide a means to correct errors, and so there is that opportunity. So effectively, they both move money very fast. Wire systems, instantly, but cost more. They're irrevocable. ACH, several hours for settlement, but cheaper, and it does provide for those administrative kind of errors as well.
So I can remember I worked for a real estate company, and it being a closing and waiting for the wire to show up.
Yeah. Yep.
So ACH, same day ACH, wouldn't be perfect in those situations.
Yeah, because ACH at this time is not a 24/7 system. There are several windows, and by the way, anybody who's interested in same day ACH should really work with their banks. While we define when those windows are, that's for the banks. The banks may have other kind of requirements for folks in AP who want to send one. So definitely work with your bank to understand the windows and the opportunities there. But yeah, it's not a 24/7 system.
Okay. I want to turn now to the events of the last 15 to 16 months and their impact on payments. I know, Rob, we talked at the beginning of the crisis about the possibility of a widespread big increase in ACH payments. But before we get to that, I want to ask Lynn a little bit about what went on with cards, which is another great alternative to paper checks. So Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about whether there was an increase in card payments and what went on during COVID?
Sure, Mary. Really, it was a mixed bag. First and foremost, I think we all know that most organizations ceased business travel for the most part altogether. Of course, there are some exceptions to that. But then any travel related spend that went on commercial cards, that, of course, went down. So no surprise, we knew that. For other organizations, other types of card spend, might have gone up, or I know they actually went up a little bit. They were buying the PPE, other expenses, like such as what's related to remote workers, people working from home. So with the uptick in that, it evened out with that lack of business travel. But then for other organizations, their spend just absolutely went down, either a little bit or a lot. And I've heard that again and again from many organizations that they definitely dropped, but they did find new opportunities for spend. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure Rob can attest, with organizations looking for more electronic means, cards were a go-to option during that time. So it was all really just a mix depending on the type of organization that we're talking about here.
Okay. So Rob, during COVID, even though this wasn't the optimal time to start an ACH program, did you see an uptick in electronic payments being made? And I'm curious, based on what you've seen in the last year or so, what you expect for the next 5 years?
Yeah, we saw, we did some original research last year during the COVID crisis. And we found certainly ACH increased a lot, as did cards, I think, as well. Electronic payments particularly ACH, really became a star of COVID in the payments world, both for B2B payments, the stimulus payments. You know, we saw there was a brief drop in volume, but then it just really climbed, and it's we're setting new records in volume, and we expect that trend to continue. You know, Mary, you and I talked about this a little while ago. So when we were doing our research, and think about the AP office during the pandemic, you know, disruption to physical locations, you know, my check stock is in the office. I'm not allowed to go in the office.
Right.
We had one story where a company, you know, has a check printer, and the technician came in to repair the check printer so they could run some checks. The technician tested positive for COVID. They had to shut down the facility. We had, I think I related to you, Mary, another time. We call it the drive-by check signing.
Yes.
So, you know, the AP manager went into the office, you know, did the one counter signature on the checks, you know, went to the park across the street, left an envelope on the table. The controller came by, countersigned the checks, you know. Checks were just unmanageable in the pandemic. So
right.
Those companies that were already set up with ACH, they certainly increased ACH payments. Those that didn't, you know, certainly looking into it, and we found it was a, as we say with those who have children, it was a teachable moment. and ACH was a real star in all this.
Yeah. So do you expect within the next 5 years we'll get rid of paper checks completely?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, it's funny. The Federal Reserve does a study, I think, every 3 years of the retail payments. So this is consumer payments. And I think it was in 2005 or 2006 that the volume of electronic payments increased over paper payments in the consumer world, bill payments and all that kind of things. We're just now seeing, and it's, you know, 15, 16 years later, we're just now seeing, you know, that nexus coming together where electronic payments are almost surpassing check payments in the B2B world. I think the trend is just slower. You know, it's more complicated. You think about all the systems that are involved. You know, when I'm paying my bills, I just log on to my bank and I can send payments.
Right.
You know, I don't have an accounting system. I don't have an ERP system. I don't have middleware. You know, I don't have my bank. You know, it's just more complicated. But certainly we think the trend, that COVID accelerated the trend. And I don't know if it's in 5 years, Mary, if that's the death of checks, but we're going to see continued adoption of electronic payments, you know, including the cards. And it's coming maybe within our lifetime.
Oh, okay. You're the first person I've heard to say that, but you did say maybe.
Right.
All right. Hey, guys, some of our audience may not know what your organizations do. We'll have a link below in the show notes for each of your groups so they can check you out. Perhaps you could take a minute and just tell the audience what your group does.
Rob, I'll let you go ahead.
Okay. Sure. So NACHA, you know, man, I had a hard time explaining to my parents what NACHA is. Like, nacho, is that Doritos and cheese?
That's what my husband calls you.
Yeah. So Once Upon a Time, we stand for the National Automated Clearinghouse Association. And we are, as I mentioned earlier, we are the governing body for the ACH, for ACH payments. So our rules, you know, provide for the interoperability of all the banks and all the millions of businesses that use the ACH. You know, I think there's like 12,000 banks and financial institutions in the US, millions of businesses and consumers use the ACH, and our rules provide that glue, you know, provide, again, for the data formats, the roles, responsibilities, warranties of all those transactions, whether it's a B2B invoice payment or a direct deposit of payroll or a government tax payment, our rules, you know, indicate how that happens. In addition to the rules, we provide education and some credentialing and certifications around ACH. Certainly, I would recommend to any of your listeners out there that are involved in ACH, it would be very good and it would behoove someone in the organization to be an accredited ACH professional. You know, you have to know your rights and responsibilities when it comes to ACH. Mm-hmm. You have to understand your bank agreements. You know, it's all good until it isn't. And then, you know, so when something goes wrong, you need to know what to do. And, you know, I think it's a very important credential for AP to consider. So we provide that credentialing, we provide education on electronic payments. And more recently, we've developed some technology to really help with data exchange between organizations, for example, with vendor master and customer master onboarding and data verification, where we think there's a gap in the industry right now. So that's Nacha in a nutshell.
Nacha in a nutshell. Okay, Lynn, recharge education in a nutshell.
Well, Rob, I love your reference to trying to explain to other people what Nacha is. When I talk about commercial cards, purchasing cards, travel cards, you know, a lot of times I get kind of these quizzical looks. But basically, Recharged Education is a company I started more than 7 years ago, catering, of course, to B2B, business-to-business payments, in particular, the usage of cards for payments. And so my company provides consulting, education, website, educational blog, training, you know, you name it, whether it be for end user or buying organizations, as well as the industry providers.
Okay. All righty. I'd like to talk a little bit about automation in the accounts payable and payments functions. I know the audience probably has some strong views on these issues. So please, if you're listening, add your comments in the comment field below and we'll respond to as many as we can. All right, Rob, over the last few years, we've seen real growth in not just invoice automation offerings, but accounts payable automation solutions, which also include the payment piece. Does this make it easier or more likely that an organization will pay using ACH?
Yes and no.
Okay. So, please explain.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of great companies out there providing, I don't know, let's call them AP portals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Google AP portals, and you'll see dozens of fine companies out there, and they offer, as you said, Mary, invoice automation, payment solutions, you know, workflow, all kinds of things. And it's Mary, as you know, when we've talked to Matt over at Credit Research,
I'm a fan of his.
Right. You know, I think it does help tremendously the AP organization, right? Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden yes. they've got a funnel where all their suppliers are coming through, standardizes the information and the processes, and it's hugely helpful. Now I'm going to put on the AR side.
Okay, if you must.
Yeah, I think the AP automation is a little one sided. You know,
it is. To be fair, Rob, it is.
Yeah, I think. You know, what you find from credit and accounts receivables professionals is that all these portals become one-off processes, right? So each one has a different login. They have different formats. Some charge for a supplier to upload invoices.
Don't get me started on that.
You know, and just imagine, you know, we talked to one large supplier. They have 400,000 customers. You know, just imagine if 1% of those customers have unique portals you have to go through. You know, it really becomes unmanageable. And that's one of the things we're trying to address with Fixius. So I think, you know, I think it does help people ramp up with electronic invoices. It does help with, you know, payments, ACH and card. I think I think there's some issues in terms of scalability. And until we can really sort of reach and understand what some interoperability might be, I think the benefits are going to continue to be one-sided. But all that said, I think it does offer some improvements, but up to a ceiling.
So the listeners, and we'll put a link up there, we had a conversation on AP automation, and this we did bring up this topic because, you know, it's nice that you look out for yourself, but it would be nice also if you looked out for your suppliers. And anyway, there are some recommendations in that, and I'm not going to go through that whole thing because it's not.
And we also heard too, you know, besides just the one-off processes, just some angst from credit and receivables professionals that, you know what, now I've lost my connection with my buyer. Now I have to do everything through the portal. You know, I can't just pick up the phone and call somebody now. And so I think there's a valuable touch point that,
it's getting
more missing. Yeah.
So the other thing, because I had this conversation with Matt also that he told me, and I had to chuckle because I know myself, like when I get a new Excel or Word, it's always a nightmare for 2 weeks as I'm cursing. And he said, and Mary, 15% of these portals upgrade every year. So
right.
Dealing with all the other issues that they don't like to begin with. And then the portals upgrade. All right. We could talk about that for a long time, but we won't. So Lynn, can you talk about the AP portals that advocate for the use of virtual cards? This is another complaint I hear sometimes from the supplier community for payments. While they sometimes are a perfect solution to a payment issue, they're not the perfect solution 100% of the time. Sometimes the supplier would be preferred to be paid in another manner. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, just building on what you already said, it's that supplier fatigue, from using all the different portals. So, Rob, you were spot on in saying that. I raised my hand earlier because as a supplier, I've experienced different customers' portals, and there's always a learning curve, always a little bit of a challenge there. But specifically, Mary, yes, when you start talking about, the virtual card payments, including those, that go through a portal, again, it's a challenge, or it can be a challenge for suppliers, because it often starts with the supplier getting an email that tells them that there is a virtual card for them in order to, to get their payment, but they have to jump through a number of steps. So you're moving from an email into a portal, and sometimes there are multiple doors to get through, to keep it safe and secure. So, that makes sense, but it does add steps for the supplier. So, while the supplier can be grateful to be paid, of course, I don't know. I think it's back to what you two were already saying, that, we need to start thinking about ways to make things easier and less expensive for suppliers. Mm-hmm. So just as an alternative, I think especially with the pandemic, we've seen greater traction on the other flavor, if you will, of the electronic payables, virtual cards being one. But the other side of that are straight through payments, and using Rob's term, running on the rails of the card world, you have straight through payments, often called buyer initiated payments or push payments, still on those card rails, but the supplier is not having to process a transaction to a virtual card that they have taken multiple steps to get at. Rather, the money is deposited right into or eventually makes its way to that supplier's bank account. So that would eliminate some of that fatigue and help address the issue that we've been talking about.
Okay. And while we're talking about cards, I'm curious, Lynn, what do you see as the biggest P-card issue or problem of 2021, 2022, if you will?
Mary, that's forcing me to narrow it down. Well, I think choosing one is difficult, so let me touch on a few. I already mentioned that for many organizations, their card spend dropped overall, in many cases, largely due to that lack of travel. But with that lower spend, that was impacting the rebates or the revenue share that these organizations were hoping for or counting on in many cases. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing right there. But then, I also look at the operational challenges that many organizations went through. For example, those that were doing just in-person training of new cardholders had to pivot and get to, more online or remote solutions, obviously. Then there was the issue of ordering cards and the delivery. Of course, pre-pandemic, they were having cards sent to the office. Organizations had to think about how they wanted to handle that. I know some that have had cards mailed right to employees' homes, but that presents, some more challenges.
Right.
Others had to come up with a different process. So all of these different hurdles were happening that just obviously weren't expected. And then I even touch on the whole change in card spend. I alluded to that earlier that, we shifted to buying the personal protective equipment, remote expenses, with all the different types of purchases that have been going on, or certainly, the first 6 months, let's say, that made, I would say, P-card fraud harder to spot.
Yeah.
Because if you are used to, you know, a certain pattern of spend, and you had your historical spend reports that you might have been using to train departments on what to look for and, you know, keeping everybody informed. Well, that went out the window. You really didn't know, you know, what was being purchased for what reason. And it was like a whole new learning curve at trying to figure out, you know, what's legitimate and what's not. And especially difficult for organizations that do not have any sort of automated auditing solution. So there's that word again, you know, automated. But yeah, lots of challenges. And I think they're settling down, but still, you know, organizations are just even now trying to catch up with their P-card policies and procedures and making sure that they're current.
Okay. All right. A lot to think about there. So back to you, Rob. You've kind of alluded to, but you managed not to talk about too much, Fixius. So you want to, I love Fixius. So you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. So Fixius, spelled P-H-I-X-I-U-S. We're pretty excited about it. And, you know, what we're trying to do is address some friction in the marketplace where we think there's a need to provide further interoperability. So I'll give you an example. As we talked about with all the different AP portals, and you've got AR portals, and there's such friction. Forget about the payment. The payment's easy. The friction is trying to onboard someone into the vendor master, getting the W-9, the insurance certifications, OFAC checks, you know, maintaining that information. You know, in our research, we found it can take 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks before you even can get to the payment. You know, you're trying to onboard this this company, you know, on the supplier side. They're getting, you know, requests directly from the customer for this information. They're getting requests from the AP portals for this information. So we know even at Nacho, you know, kind of a small mid-sized company, it's taking more resources just to respond to these requests. And then think about too, how do I let everyone know my information has changed? And maybe it's something as innocent as a contact, but maybe something really important, like a bank account information change. And so this is where, you know, business email compromise comes in. You know, AP gets these emails and letters. And Mary, I think we found in our research, not everyone even checks these things.
I know.
Before they update it. So you think about the friction around, you know, trying to do this data information exchange, the friction around verifying the information once you have it, and the friction around or the risk around fraud and whatnot. So what we're trying to do with Fixius is establish a network of trusted entities so that this information can be exchanged securely. You know, we're using blockchain, not for cryptocurrency, but, you know, to establish this information exchange, to establish the trust, and to establish the verification of these sources. So we're looking at, you know, AP, vendor master onboarding, customer master onboarding, data validations and verifications. Think about account verifications and things like that. So we're really, and we're not trying to provide, I don't know, the one solution. We're trying to provide a one-stop shop, if you will, to provide interoperability within all these proprietary networks. Because when you think about these AP automation networks, it works great. If the buyer and the supplier are both in that network, it works fine. But what happens if I'm in another network and another network and another network? You see, the scalability doesn't work. So we're trying to address that interoperability layer to be able to reduce a lot of that friction around what we call pre- and post-payment processes.
So to be clear, Rob, so that there can be no misunderstanding on the part of our audience, because I know many of them would be chomping at the bit to get this. I know I would be, and I'd be recommending it all over the place. This product is not available to individual end users.
That's right, yeah. So our model is, you know, kind of like the ACH. It's really only banks that can send and receive ACH transactions. Well, in Fixius, it's only banks and technology providers and payment providers and AP solutions that are going to be sending and receiving information requests on behalf of their customers. So that's correct, Mary.
Okay. And if I recall correctly, all you're doing is confirming or denying. You're saying, yes, that's a legitimate account number. No, it's not. You're not correcting the information.
Well, we have a number of what we call exchange services. So we have an exchange service around vendor onboarding. We have an exchange service around customer master onboarding. We have an exchange service around account verification. So for that particular exchange service, you're right. You know, someone who, and there's a number of use cases why you want to verify a routing and account number. So that is true. That's another exchange service that we provide within Fixius, the ability to confirm the ability of a routing and account number to receive an ACH transaction or not.
So I think that's a great innovation, but I won't pontificate anymore. Okay, before we talk about instant payments, which I want to talk about, I'd love to invite the audience to subscribe to this channel. And if watching, hit the bell at the top to be notified of new postings, which happen 2 or 3 times a week. Now back to our experts. I know both of you have made it patently clear to me that you are not instant payment experts, but you have graciously agreed to discuss it briefly. And by the way, you're not giving yourself enough credit. So, Rob, most of our audience does not currently use instant payments. And I think a recent survey showed that, but some of them do. It's something that I want to make sure is on everyone's horizon, as I think they need to know more about it. Could you give us a brief explanation of this and also of the Fed's FedNow program, which is not a program?
I'll try to provide a little framework here, and us payment geeks love this stuff, but it can be confusing to common folk out there. So when we talk about instant payments, we're talking about the ability of a payment system. Again, what's a payment system? It's rules and rails. It's the ability of a payment system to transfer money from one account to another account instantly. A wire payment is an example of an instant payment that everyone is familiar with. Now, people might think credit cards are instant payments, but they're actually not. It's instant verification and authorization, right, Lynn, for a payment. And then settlement, the movement of the money actually happens later, typically over the ACH. So the money movement happens, the next day. So that's more of an instant authorization as opposed to an instant payment. So wire system is an instant payment. The New York Clearinghouse has developed and launched another instant payment system in addition to the wire. It's called real-time payments. And again, this is a bank-to-bank transfer where funds can actually move instantly from one bank account to another bank account. And the Federal Reserve is coming out with a, competing compatible product called FedNow. Again, where we can instantly move, money from one account to another account. You know, ACH, classic ACH is a next day system. Same day ACH is several hours. So it's not an instant payment. It certainly is a faster payment. And so that fits under these faster payment categories. So for your audience, as your audience is seeking ways to, there's different use cases for you need to send the money right away. Maybe your credit line's on hold and, whatever. You have to send the money right away.
Yes, that happens.
There's different options for faster payments, including same-day ACH, wire, real-time payments, and soon to be, probably in a couple of years, FedNow is another option. And again, it would be best to for your audience, Mary, to contact their banks and their bank representative to really understand what the bank offers. Not all the banks offer all these solutions. So
As I understand it, at least at the current time, there's some fraud concerns.
I don't know that instant payments, faster payments necessarily introduce any other additional fraud risk. I think fraud, you still have to follow your internal controls.
No, I didn't mean risk. I meant you can't get the payment back.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, so, I wasn't correct. I didn't word that well.
Okay. I got it. So, right. We talked about the difference between same-day ACH and wire, that a wire is irrevocable. You make a mistake. Sorry. ACH does allow for some administrative error correction and follow-up. Real-time payments is a credit only. So it's not a debit pull, but a credit only. And I'm not sure of the rules there, if there is any kind of administrative follow-up or not.
I think at this time not, but there's hope for the future. That's my, sure. But yeah. You know, this is changing every day. So depending upon when people are listening to this, that may or may not be accurate anymore. All right, Lynn, you know, I'm not going to leave you out on. I always try and get her to talk about instant payments. She's like, no, I'm not an expert, but she knows a lot about it. Do you expect instant payments to make an impact on P-card usage, or do you think ultimately these are two different markets?
Well, I think they're yes and no. See, there, I'll take Rob's answer from earlier. It depends, and it's a situational thing. Time will tell, certainly.
Right.
But, you know, I do think, you know, I already alluded to it, you know, organizations are pretty focused on the monetary incentives in the form of rebates or revenue share that they get from card usage, that they're not just going to abandon that. And, right. You know, I would also say that instant payments aren't necessarily necessary for every single purchase. I mean, if you think about what a P card purchasing card is intended for, certainly the bread and butter of it are these small dollar transactions. Often they can certainly be higher, but you don't need the instant payment, you know, aspect of it. But there certainly are situations where it will be where it'll be a great solution. I think organizations should include it within their toolbox of payment options. You know, it could replace all those rush checks that you love so much. You know, that's one thing. Rob alluded to other situations where instant payments can really come in handy. But, you know, I think the card programs will remain intact. You know, some other considerations, there might be, say, a higher education institution that has, say, research participants that come in that are getting paid to participate. And, you know, like today, there might be a prepaid card or something given to those folks for that particular activity. You know, could you replace that with an instant payment? I don't know. I mean, I still see that there's a fairly good division between where instant payments will be really, really useful versus the card world. But I could be wrong. I always say
I agree with you that, you know, there's use cases. One of the ones in our research we uncovered, which, you know, I should have thought about, but I don't stay up late anymore, is, you know, think about when a bar closes at 2 o'clock and, you know, it's not cash that you're dividing up anymore, but it's these electronic payments.
Right.
You know, they can send an instant payment to the bartender and whatnot. That's a use case, you know, Uber drivers. I can get my money right away after I do the drive. So there's certainly use cases, but to Lynn's point, I don't think it's going to universally replace any kind of, I don't know. Mary, I've never heard any of your audience say, you know, I want to pay faster. You know,
right. No, you've never.
You know, if anything, they might use it to pay later so they can, you know, push the terms out.
Right. Why do you think they like cards so much?
I was going to say, you know, because cards offer, you know, usually some kind of float on the payment.
Yeah.
So I think Lynn alluded to the fact it'll be one more tool in your toolbox of pay, you know, because no one method is good for everything, unfortunately. Okay. I want to ask each of you about your consulting services and then close with some suggestions from you for the audience on making the payment process more efficient, obviously using P-cards and ACH. So, Rob, why don't you start off telling us about Notcha Consulting?
Sure. You know, we get a lot of questions from companies that are looking to implement an ACH program or improve an ACH program. Maybe they need help with internal controls and that kind of thing. And that's what Notcha Consulting really is set up to do, to consult with these companies on how to implement and improve ACH processes, both on the payables and receivables side. So that's, you know, and all kinds of different projects come across our desk in terms of trying to help people with these things, understanding the rules, understanding the process flows, implementation, you know, options and scenarios, you know, cost benefit, all that kind of stuff. So Notcha Consulting can help you with that.
Okay, and they can get to Nacha Consulting from the link that I'm going to put down below.
Yeah, nacha.org, yeah.
Okay, all righty. Lynn, you also do some consulting. Can you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, Mary, definitely. In the purchasing card realm, you know, it's kind of what Rob said. You've got the whole array of controls, risks, procedures, policies, procedures, opportunities, best practices, what improvements could take place. So I have worked with a number of end user organizations, both public and private, to look, well, it depends on the project, but looking at these different aspects. What are they trying to accomplish? You know, where can they increase their usage? Are they doing things in the best manner possible? Are they aligned with best practices that we're seeing through industry research? So there's a number of facets that I can help organizations look at and really consider how they can be better and get more rewards from that product.
And speaking of how you can make some recommendations, perhaps you could start with some recommendations on how to increase card usage, get rid of paper checks, and become more efficient.
Paper checks in our lifetime. Right, we're going to get rid of those. You know, I think with the card program, P-card program in particular, you know, I said earlier how they were always brought onto the scene for those small dollar transactions especially. So just as a starting point, if an organization can take their file from AP, you know, look at all the payments, check payments in particular, that they made to vendors that are under, say, $5,000, or even take the ones under $2,500. And you'll see that, by and large, it's the majority of what an organization is doing. And so, you know, it's not efficient to be running small dollar things through AP every time. You know, all those invoices, many a times there is a purchase order. It's just very cumbersome where the whole process can end up costing more, you know, than the actual payment that you're doing. So start with looking at those, you know, get that file and start to identify where there might be some vendors that you could start to turn and wrap into your P-card program. And that's where the card issuers come into play. I mean, they are more than happy to help organizations identify and do matches, you know, between card acceptors and where the organization is spending money. So start there and you can just grow from that point on.
Okay. Rob, what do you have for guys?
Yeah, I like what Lynn said. You know, Lynn, you kind of demystified it. People are like, oh, how do we do more electronic payments? And yeah, it's really, you know, as Lynn, as you said, you know, who are you sending checks to? Mm-hmm. Reach out, you know, do they want to accept cards? You know, the simplest solution is an old fashioned solution, although it's a cell phone now, but you know, pick up the phone and call. Believe it or not, you know, in our research, when we found, you know, when we're asking companies, how did you increase electronic payments originated, or on the supplier side, how did you increase electronic payments received? Yeah, we called and we asked. So we stratified our customer base, you know, based on, you know, number of checks sent or number of checks received. And believe it or not, because AP and AR often don't talk to one another, it was just a matter of asking. So I think it's a combination of, yeah, there's some new technology that's evolving. The AP automation, some of the things Lynn was talking about, Fixius, you know, that's helping. But it's also simply asking. As I said, I think this is a teachable moment. Post-pandemic, people are really open to maybe changing some of their payment behavior. And they don't know who to contact. So if they get the call, that helps them. So, you know, use that phone. I think that's an effective tool.
Okay. Well, and I think to add to that, just prioritizing too, you know, right. You might identify some pretty key suppliers that you've mm-hmm. been paying with check. So, you know, it's not just about the little folks, but look at those ones that are repeatedly getting payments month after month and prioritize from there.
Right.
Okay. Well, that was pretty interesting. You've alluded to a number of things that are actually going to be discussed in the next episode 102. So if you're watching this on YouTube, please come back tomorrow, same time, same channel, so to speak. We'll be talking about automation and some of the issues that these two experts addressed. You might also like episode 83 on how best practice organizations pay their bills. If you're watching on YouTube, a link will appear to the left momentarily. As always, we appreciate your comments and your thumbs up. Thanks, guys.